Very honestly, is that those allegations against us, everything that I responded to, many have also responded in the same form, whether politicians or media figures and other people on social media. But I also want to fulfill some of my responsibilities as well. And we believe that everything that they are doing is a systematic targeting, which is politicized and which is also paid. Very honestly, we have evidence, we have documents that prove, we spoke about even media outlets, TV stations, and people, specific figures, they are all paid to do this. Definitely, we have logic. What we can give are very convincing, logical evidence. And for those people who are logical, who do think, many of them are perhaps at a loss, and they do not have a clear image of what's happening. This extent of accusation itself, those people did not accept it. In any case, this campaign against Hezbollah, this has proven that if what is wanted or the goal is to touch on the awareness of the resistance supporters, or to provoke them, or to change that ethical standards of those people who love the resistance and who adore the resistance, this God Almighty would have hopefully a reverse effect. And we have seen that the resistance supporters and everything that they have expressed, whether it is in social media or in the streets or the media outlets, that they continue to hold on to the resistance, they continue to understand the how the resistance is being oppressed, is wrongfully accused. And on this occasion, I would like to also thank it is my responsibility to thank all the supporters of resistance, the people, the politicians, the media outlets, and all the friends who were present, whether in social media or in media outlets or any form of a presence or a defense of the resistance, and faced these accusations and also responded to those foolish accusations and expressed this in a way which is logical. And they also showed the level of ethics that the resistance has, and has given the resistance, which has given the highest level of people and the greatest men and women and children for the sake of this country. And therefore, this is part of that that path. If there are any sort of questions, perhaps some of the support of the resistance who, as a result of their emotions, they use language which is cursing, which is not acceptable. This is something we need to fix, and this will be fixed. I need to tell you that this sort of campaign, Lebanon is open, of course, to all sorts of events. We need to expect something which is perhaps similar to what we saw. We need to be ready, and we need to also be always ready to be resilient in the face of such threats and such campaigns, in order to defeat it and transform this into an opportunity. This is when it comes to the domestic level. I want to come to the third issue, to continue the investigations on the Beirut explosion. In the last speech that I spoke about, the explosion, the Beirut explosion, and our information, the intelligence that we have, is that the investigation that took place has ended. And this investigation has been taken to the general prosecutor, the legal prosecutor, and also the internal security forces have also done their job and their investigations. That means that investigations are over. They have also made use of experts, whether American or German or foreign. There are so many experts that they made use of, and they came and they assisted in this investigation. This is a very very technical investigation. Today, that time, I asked the army and the security forces and the judicial system to declare openly what the results of the investigation are. This is very significant, whether on the level, psychological level, or the political level, even the emotional level of the martyrs, for the families of the martyrs and those whose homes were destroyed and who lost their livelihood. And this is why it's very important for them to know what happened. After the speech, some of our brothers in Hezbollah followed up with the Lebanese army authority and the internal security forces, and even with the presidency. All those sides told us that this is something that usually, legally, when the report goes to the judicial system, it is the responsibility of the judicial system, that the army cannot declare any details, that the presidency cannot declare any details, the security system, apparatus cannot also come and declare things openly. So therefore, it's important for us to see which side is responsible, what needs to be done. It's the judicial system now. It is their responsibility now to declare the result of the technical investigation in the Beirut port explosion. This is the right of the Lebanese people. This is the right of every single person also in the region whom you fed lies and accusations to. Those people need to know the truth. What was in the port? What exactly happened in the port explosion? And then you come to the accusations and see who needs to bear responsibility and go to courts and do whatever you want. But first, declare the result. I call once more and again to declare the results of the investigation. Now, something else I want to say is that during this time, there were families of martyrs who have homes, who have cars, who have shops that were destroyed. They came to us also and they told us we had insurance in some companies, insurance companies that are, whether they are domestic and they are they have partnerships with foreign companies, and therefore this is insurance for us to be paid for any sort of destruction as such. And after the investigation was not declared, then therefore the insurance did not give the people anything. They said we're waiting for the results, because if this is a terrorist act or it's a war act, then therefore we cannot pay. We cannot say anything. If it's something else, if it's something that is accidental, then therefore we will pay. But this is something that we know people who told us about this issue. This is to the extent that what we were told, I don't want to come and say exactly what it is, that the amount of the insurance money that should be paid to the families of martyrs, to the wounded, and those people who lost their homes or shops or vehicles is more than $1.2 billion. This is money that needs to come to those people. And I believe that the insurance companies, I don't think that they would come and say, if they come and pay this money to those people, this would be very significant for the people. This would be very significant for the area. This is their right as well. This is also something that would revive Beirut and would revive the downtown area, and still they are not being paid. And what is worse than this is that we had some people who told us that some of the insurance companies would come to those people and would give them a sheet that they sign. They would give them 30% only of what they owe them. And they told them that if the investigation comes out that it is a war, the result of a war or a terrorist act, then therefore you would give us back this money. And if it's not, then you would only keep that 30%, and we would not pay more than that. And to the extent that, very honestly, many of those people also have doubt. They have a doubt to reach a state that they have a certain doubt between even the insurance companies and the judicial system. Today, declaring the results of investigations would be something that would open the doors and would assist thousands or hundreds of families who have lost their martyrs, families who have lost their people, families who have lost their homes or vehicles or shops. What is the judge waiting for? What is the reason for this? Declaring the results of investigation would lead to any sort of an equation? Ye need to come and declare that result in order for the to show the technical issues, which are very clear now. I'm calling on everyone to, because this is a very significant and issue for the people, and we should not be silent on it. We should continue. The next issue is the government, the Lebanese government. I do not think that anyone does not want. This is only very concisely. I do not think that anyone does not want a government. I don't think anyone can come and say that president does not want to form a cabinet. He wants to keep things like this until the end of his term. Also, the prime minister designate does not want to form a cabinet, and the Hezbollah does not want to form a cabinet because they're waiting for the nuclear deal. And because for us, our calculations are that we believe that we do not think that anyone, it's not right to accuse anyone that they do not want to form a cabinet. Everyone wants to form a cabinet. I am not saying this. I'm not complimenting anyone. I am just wanting the truth that this is the truth that everyone wants to form a cabinet. Before, they used to say that we were waiting for the results of the American elections. Oh, this is done. We're waiting for Biden to take office. That's done. If we're waiting for that, then therefore those issues have already uncovered, already been clear. The things that are were the complex issues in this regard. The first point, which we think is a very positive issue, that no one is insisting on not forming a cabinet. Everyone wants to form a cabinet based on their own calculations. The interest of everyone is that a cabinet is formed. Any talk about waiting for the Iran's nuclear deal, this has no base. And the statements, the latest statements of the authorities here showed us where the real problem lies. It is not right that we wait for the outside foreign interference. The outside or the foreign sides cannot help and assist Lebanon in to come and exert pressure on this side or on that side. This will not reach anywhere. This will not lead to any sort of a solution. We cannot bring in, perhaps it could be someone who could come and try to discuss the common ground or common denominators. But perhaps, yes, but this would not bring us to a solution. What is happening is that each side is only sticking to its own positions or its own opinion. But putting oil on the flames is not significant. The very high level of conditions will also complicate things further. This is all in order for us to come and see how it is, the scene. But the real problem, we believe that we know that there's a certain atmosphere in the country as a result of the differing political sides, some of the media capabilities. It seems that everyone, they want to only put the responsibility and the blame on the president Michel Aoun. This is not fair. This is something that is not right. Everyone bears responsibility. Everyone needs to find a solution. And here I want to give an example. We understand the significance of the insistence from the Prime Minister designate. Let us just let the Prime Minister designate also bear some of that responsibility. We understand that he is insisting on having the internal the Interior, the Ministry of Interior. He said that I want to name the Minister of Interior. And here we're trying to see how, if he accepts or not, that he wants to only give the name of that. I understand that. This is something that is understandable. And the partners, Hezbollah and Amal movement, cannot accept this, whether it is for the prime minister or the president. When the Shiite groups said that they wanted the finance ministry, they wanted everyone to understand that if someone else said that they want to hold on to the Ministry of Interior, we also understand. We also understand. We are not putting any sort of condition, but we also understand there is certain concern from certain positions, whether it's from the president or the prime minister, that not one single political party has the veto power inside the cabinet. There was perhaps before in the past, there was a group that was made out of more than one party that has veto power. This is something we understand. But when we come, what we could not understand is insisting on 18 ministers. Why don't we do it 20 ministers or 22 ministers? This is not a huge problem. We've always had 30 minister cabinets. Why are you insisting on 18 ministers? I'm not taking things back to square one. From the beginning, we were very honest in speaking. We said we accepted 18 ministers. We did not accept these issues in the past because we did not want to postpone. But we are already late. We have already postponed all of these, all this time, all these months, and therefore, why are you insisting on 18? If we did them 20, if we made a 20-minister cabinet, this would make way for more rounding or a common ground or more talks or more understanding between all sides. And this is what we saw also in one of the areas between some political forces. Some sides believe that 18 ministers would end the presence completely of one group of Lebanese, of one of the sects. So if we go to, for example, a 20-minister cabinet or 22-minister cabinet, then therefore no one would feel that they are being isolated or marginalized, and therefore we could come and discuss numbers in a way that would put everyone at ease. I call on everyone that call on revising this issue. It is not a problem that, okay, you said the period, we can probably change the position of that period because this could probably open the door to resolving the crisis, which would be possible and take us out of this closed tunnel in order for us to form the cabinet. And all of us need to cooperate and resolve this issue. The next file, the last issue on the domestic level, is our relationship with our allies. Because this is an issue that has been brought up in media, and also the 15th anniversary of the alliance between the Free Patriotic Movement and Hezbollah, which was signed in the Maram Khayel church near the southern Beirut suburbs. This was an alliance that had so many benefits and interests to the country and national benefits as well. What we wanted was also wider level of alliances. Many people had bargained on the fact that this alliance would just break very easily. The two sides would go in two different and opposing sides. That itself, and they said that this sort of alliance would not last, but it has lasted for 15 years. And some people even worked on breaking that alliance. Perhaps sometimes an alliance breaks as a result of both sides, but there were some people who were working day and night, even in the media, psychological warfare, psychological campaigns, or certain taking advantage of even small incidents in order to try to break that alliance. And this is something that did not happen. Why? The result of the strength of this alliance, which continues until today. This said, when we talk about 15 years, this is country where we always have changes, the alliances change, and the friendships change, enmities change. People very easily move their guns from that position to that position. And this is a very significant point, that we can keep an alliance for that long. This is an alliance that has achieved many interests for the country and for both sides. We cannot say that this alliance only benefited the Free Patriotic Movement and did not benefit Hezbollah. No, both sides benefited from this alliance, and this is only natural when both sides have agreed to this alliance, and therefore both sides would benefit from this, when, especially when it comes to, say, when we designated exactly what those benefits and interests are and how they were achieved. We, both sides, are very much concerned about protecting that alliance. This is something that is bear by both the authorities in Hezbollah and the Free Patriotic Movement. Both sides also call on revising or discussing continuously this alliance, and this is something where we also agreed on today. I want to also be very honest with everyone. After all the evaluations or the negative feedback, that even when we disagree, perhaps we might disagree on even what the comment is when we have a statement from the Free Patriotic Movement, or one figure from, or two figures from the Free Patriotic Movement, we disagree and we say that we are against this statement, but this will unfortunately even be used by those people who are accusing Hezbollah and insulting Hezbollah. The last statement for the Free Patriotic Movement has so many advantages, but they lost one point when they said, for example, they are considering a constructive evaluation of this alliance. They are saying that this alliance failed in building a state. But that statement, unfortunately, was used by so many, and those many people are those who have been trying to break this alliance since the year 2006 until today. In any case, our method, some people tell us, you're not stating, you're not responding. We tell them, I cannot tell them that we are, of course, this is a method that would discourage us. But if we have any points or anything to say to the Free Patriotic Movement or all our allies, whether the Amal movement and all our other friends, we prefer to talk about these things internally, behind closed doors, between each other. This is how members of one family talk. This is how two friends talk. They don't come openly in the media and talk about things or a statement. We come as a party, of course. When it comes to social media, we'll talk about this as well. So therefore, I stress again at the end of this this issue that we have a strong alliance. We can working on strengthening and developing this this alliance as well. And I also want to stress here our concern and how we are always insisting on communicating with all our allies, and Hezbollah also communicates with the Amal movement and the other allies and friends. Sometimes what is happening in the country, there is a problem, which is social media. There's a big problem in social media in our country. When someone, for example, has a statement or a certain declaration, there is a certain atmosphere among the supporters of that group. They attack the other forces, the other groups, and the people consider that this is an enmity, this is a strong rift, and that is, this is not true. This is a problem that we have, it's true, and I would like to say to all those, the supporters who are there in the social media, that we need to be very precise, we need to be clear, that from one side, if I have two points, it's not always the enemy that is working. There is, of course, the enemy, the Israeli, or the people who are with Israel, or the people who are with the Americans. They are saying that they have electronic soldiers, and they create names or accounts, and they come to try to create sedition among the religions, and to create trouble between Sunnites and Shiites and the Lebanese themselves just recently on social media. And I think one person who is Jordanian, and his position from Israel is very ugly position. He is proud of the fact that he created a group of Iranian websites that speak in Hebrew and a group of Iraqi websites, and he created this rift or this position between them. He created this social war, this social media war between those sides, between Arabs and Iranians on the internet. So anyone who could come and try to provoke this, someone could come, just a statement, one small statement, was this side response and that side response, and that's it. Then therefore, this would create that huge problem. Another thing that we cannot come and put aside, even among parties, among forces that are allies with each other and have good ties and have even existential and strategic ties, they can perhaps, among the supporters, you might find people who have locked their brains, they put themselves in the box, and they come and find an old file, and they come in order to try to use it as leverage to try to attack the other sides. And then therefore we need to create another committee in order to solve this problem. But it's okay. People used to fight each other and they used to shoot each other with guns. Now they're shooting each other with words. But when you come and see the problem on social media, if they see or read this, and they say there is no one with no one, there is everyone, is no one is in alliance with anyone, no one is friends with anyone. We're not just talking even within March 14th or within March 8th or those allies. It's weird. It's strange. This situation, this is very dangerous. One person would probably feel sometimes as a result of the anger and the fact that there are no laws that govern this, that they would only give people arms and weapons, and therefore they would create a civil war, because all of this provocations, all of this sedition, how could people bear all this that long? Not everyone has understanding or has this awareness or this capability to be patient. I feel sometimes that there are people who want to take Lebanon to an explosion resulting from what is happening in social media. This is something that would put on our shoulders so much responsibility on the parties, on the security, and even the supporters of this party, this group, that movement. This does not mean that I'm telling people to be silent. No, I'm telling people, please express your opinion, say what you want, but there needs to be ethical code of ethics. There need to be no cursing, no haphazard accusations, especially for those who believe in Judgment Day. No one should think that if we are sitting in a meeting together and we spoke about someone or one side, that this is something that is a bad deed and we will be punished as a result of this. But if I come and create this sedition in social media, that God will not judge me based on this? Yes, He will. In closed doors, it would only be very small repercussion. But now, with all of this, it's like you're standing on the rooftop of a building and cursing someone and letting everyone hear. In any case, this is an issue that is very sensitive and very dangerous. And I call on everyone to be present in social media. But the code of ethics is very significant. The right words used, not insulting symbols of others, even if they were from the enemy. This is our Quran. This is our teachings of Prophet Muhammad. This is the method of working, of doing, dealing with things in good awareness, giving good evidence, giving good proof. We have good logic. We have good evidence. We do not need another form of speech. And I wanted to stress on this. If someone from the Allies or friends, they were wrong in speaking certain, giving some certain words, no one should come and also completely come and accuse them and try to consider that this person alone is guilty. We need to have good logic and a good speech. There should not be insults or reciprocal insults, and all this atmosphere, honestly, these people are really reaching a state where there are absolutely no codes, no sort of legislations, no sort of values that govern that sort of communication on social media. And I come and tell them that, no, I'm not saying that people should be silent. Once more, I respond that when you were there in the last 2 weeks, when you gave your opinion, when you expressed your opinion, when you also helped with through logic and evidence defend resistance, I want to thank you for all of this courage that you had. But also, we need to make sure that we live through that code of ethics, because this is something that God Almighty has asked us to live through in this life. And in order for us to live and go to the next life and to heaven, we also need to defend the resistance in the same code of ethics and manners. In the regional level, I will only speak of very few issues, and then I will speak about the Israeli issue also very briefly. There's no doubt that there are developments that are great and very significant in our region and in the world, especially after the dismissal of Trump, whom we are pleased to see leave this administration, and the presence of the new administration, which has different priorities. Of course, they do not have differing major objectives, but they have perhaps how they prioritize things and how they work with issues based on the previous failures and the new opportunities. Today, when we come, let's relieve ourselves, let's come out of Lebanon. When we look at what's happening in the region, Lebanon is impacted by the region very strongly. This point that Lebanon is an island in the Indian Ocean or the Pacific Ocean, this is something only imaginary. Lebanon is part of this region. Anything that happens in the region would impact Lebanon, whether we like it or not. There are certain points and titles and segments that I want to talk about that they to see how they are impacting Lebanon. They would impact the entire region as well. I will speak about them not based on their importance, on their level of importance, but in what we have. We have, for example, the nuclear file, the Iranian nuclear file. This is one of the first files or issues that we have in the region, because we have a new U.S. administration. There were certain calls, there were certain differing statements. The Islamic Republic of Iran has a very firm and strong stance and is very concerned about its own interests. And we have also the other authorities. This leader, Khamenei, also said that has a concern. He has spoken about this. It's very strong stance, and others, authorities have, because they want to take them to the issue of the nuclear deal. This would have an impact on the entire region as well. Now, in this file, we want to show the clear Israeli concern, and Netanyahu said very clearly, we are at odds with the U.S. on the issue of the Iranian nuclear deal. So, therefore, this file would be taken, and they would be followed up to see where we reach and we have a scene of courage and nobility and dignity of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And Trump, how long did he wait for that Iranian phone call? He left office and he did not get that phone call in one of the harshest situations or circumstances Iran accepted and lived through the worst sanctions, and still they did not change the positions to protect their own sovereignty and their resources. To the Yemeni file, the Yemeni issue, this issue, it's clear how significant its presence is now in the region for several reasons. One of them is the what is happening in the battlefield. Also, the new administration. It's not time now to come and talk about the reasons behind this, but they have declared that they will stop supporting this war. Besides this fact that whether they wanted to continue this war and they didn't have enough artillery or not, even this, the declaration itself of stopping support or ending the war, even as a form, even in shape, is a positive issue which could probably open the horizon, open the doors, although our friends in Yemen, our brothers in Yemen, are also very much apprehensive, because the enemy, when they are when they fail, they will try to have another plan. Well, they will try to plant a bomb in front of you. This is something, of course, it's only natural that they are very apprehensive and very careful about what is happening. But this is shows some positivity in the future. But this is the result also of the steadfastness of the Yemeni people and their bearing of this blockade and this aggression that left no rock, no building. And they stood there very resiliently, very strongly. And what has happened, we reached today that the people who were silent on all the shelling of Sana'a and Sada, they now have to give many statements, because Ansarullah are defending their own country and launching rockets against the country which is launching this aggression against them, which is the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. In any case, today, Ansarullah, the Yemeni army, the popular forces are in a very frontline stance. They have advanced today. They are shouting, help us please with Maghrib, the issue of Maghrib. If Ansarullah, were able to take that front, then this would have a very harsh repercussions against the aggressors. This is the result, the fruit of steadfastness, of patience, of sacrifice. They are the honest and steadfast people who will bear the fruit of their struggle. And also for us over here on the nuclear issue, I said whoever's concerned is the Israeli, and the Israeli, in the issue of Yemen, who is concerned is the Israeli, the Saudi and the Israeli. So what would happen at the end is that we have a huge defeat, a huge failure for that axis that has so many slogans and titles, and they war against Yemen and they could not achieve any of it. Three, the Syrian file, Syrian issue, the developments inside Syria also are very significant. With the Biden administration, what would happen in the West Euphrates, the Kurds and the Americans, the Christian opposition, the revival of Daesh once more, the Americans saying that it is no longer our job to protect the petrol pipes, and that they would bring in more Daesh. They say that they have to defend, we have to fight Daesh. They bringing in, then they put them back into their holes, then they bring them back in. This is the Americans that are doing this, because they want to stay. They want to stay in Syria. They want to stay in Iraq. And the new administration, if we say that the Biden or the Trump administration wanted to stay here and wanted to leave there, it seems no. The new administration is thinking of how it stays in Iraq and how it stays in Syria and Western Eastern Euphrates. What is the pretext? The pretext that is being used is Daesh, and this is why we see that there is a movement for Daesh. They revive Daesh in that area very clearly at a time when we have people shouting, you have committed the crime of the century and you need to leave. At a time when we have the parliament, the people, the popular voices calling on the withdrawal of the foreign troops, they have revived Daesh. In Syria also, they have revived Daesh. This issue in the face of the resistance and all those, this would not be successful. Who was able to defeat Daesh in the past would be, God willing, capable of defeating Daesh also once more in any sort of job with Daesh, whether they want to revive it in Iraq or Syria, or perhaps even revive it in Lebanon. This would not be defensive for us. It should not be defensive. We should not give any opportunity to the revival of Daesh in our region. It should be offensive directly. The issue of Syria also, Caesar, and threatening to launch Caesar to threatening more sanctions and the new presidential elections and how they will deal with this. This is a file which is very significant, the continuous Israeli aggressions against Syria. What is their reason? What are the indicators for all of these issues? This is an issue that needs more talk, more details, needs more time. Also in Iraq, and what has happened after the crime of the century against Abu Hash Qasem Soleimani, Abu Mahdi Mohandas, and trying to revive Daesh and trying to revive the sedition among the Iraqi people, the Afghani file and case, whether the Americans withdraw, whether they stay, whether they deploy their forces some more. All of these files, all of these issues and topics are open at the same time. Also issues related to Turkey and Iraq, Turkey and northern Syria, and Greece and Turkey, and all of these issues will have their impact on the region. Of course, I cannot come and talk about Palestine right now because I will talk about it separately. It's clear that the U.S. administration today, if they come and say, let's see in the nuclear deal what we want to do, let's see in Afghanistan how we want to be decisive, let's stop the war in Yemen, let's do this and that, and they come, it seems that the Americans or the new U.S. administration, the priority is China. The priority is Russia. And for China, represents one of the main economic threats for the U.S. Originally, it was as such. And even if it continues with Corona next year, then the rift or the difference between China and the U.S. will be extreme. And this is something the U.S. cannot bear. Maybe because the U.S., the main priority is it's China, then Russia, they are trying in the first level to see all of these files in the region, see how they're going to work on these files, but only in trying to be realistic and face that, for example, Iran is resilient, is determined. Iraq is also determined. In Syria, there is determination and resilience. How can we pragmatically and realistically resolve these issues because we want to give more time to the Chinese issue and the Russian issue? This reminds me also on issues related to the international standards. Those Lebanese people are asking to take this, our file, to the international standard. Who is free for us? Everyone is busy with their disasters and the coronavirus and their economic situation. I read that Britain, the economic collapse has not been the case in 300 years. Everyone is busy with their own priorities, with their own problems. Lebanon, perhaps, if they have any place in the world, it will be at the end of the list. We cannot wait for the outside and foreign assistance. We need to work only on our own achievements. Let me conclude with the Palestinian file and the Israelis. The Palestinian file is very strong today, its presence, its impact on this year, as it always been, and in the future. Today we want to record something very significant, but we need more study or scrutiny. I want to be careful when I say it, the deal of the century. No one has even mentioned the deal of the century, not even as a speech, even in political speech or as political talk or rhetoric. Very, very few. I'm trying to be very careful about this, but it seems that when Trump and Kushner with him, of course, the deal of the century itself, whether this deal has ended, whether it is over, and this is a huge concern for the Israelis and the Saudis, this trio of Trump, Mohammed bin Salman, and Netanyahu, one of them left, and therefore there's only Netanyahu, Mohammed bin Salman left. And we see that the Secretary of State, who said that there should not be annexation of Golan Heights, should not be part of the deal of the century, means that he is not talking about the deal of the century. They said that there would be also a call for as well talking about the two-state solution in one way or the other. Also, the deal of the century would not even mention the two-state solution. Then there would be no form of saying that perhaps that there is a deal of a century, that this would mean that they are taking their final breath, or perhaps it has no place anymore. This does not mean that the Americans, perhaps they have a conscience. This is a result of the resilience of the Palestinian people and all the Palestinian factions who refused the deal of the century and who refused to surrender. They were put in the face of one of the severest situation and sanctions and a boycott, and still they did not withdraw. They did not retreat, and the U.S. administration saw that the deal of the century would not reach anywhere. If they want to resolve the regional issues in order to go to the issue of China, then they need to end that issue and, the, for example, the resilience of the Palestinian resistance and Palestinian authorities. This would be the result, which is the failure of the deal of the century. Another issue, which is a huge challenge, which is the normalization of ties with the Israelis. And following up all the analysis of the Israelis, whether the commanders or intelligence figures or military figures or generals, they are trying in one way to give the issue of normalization of ties a huge significance. They are trying to amplify this. This is all about also the political gains, especially for Netanyahu. Anything that has to do with normalization of ties with some of the Arab states, he pushes those aside. He pushes aside the defense minister. He pushes aside the foreign minister. He wants to be there personally because he wants to use this as a political gain to use for the elections. We see here that there is a huge exaggeration, as they exaggerated during the time when they did an agreement with Egypt and Jordan. We can see the example of the Egyptian people and the Jordanian people. It's true that the government has signed a normalization of ties and agreements, but the people have a clear and firm and noble position against normalization of ties, despite all the harsh circumstances that they have lived through, they continue to live through today. This is something that would come also to the rest of the people. We saw the position of the Bahraini people and their protests and the clerics, those who are inside Bahrain, those who are threatened with imprisonment, but still, that position is very clear. And the call of the Bahraini opposition and the clerics, whether the Sunnis or the Shiites, to boycott all the banks, all the institutions that normalize ties with the Israelis, is a very significant stance. Also in other Arab states, in Golan Heights, despite all the years of occupation, the people of the Golan Heights have stood very clearly. Their refusal to their refusal of normalization of ties with the Israelis, those are who are under occupation, have this stance. People who are outside of, not under occupation have that stance. In Algeria, in Tunisia, the people, the government also have the same stance. Also in other countries which are the Muslim and not Arab states, like Pakistan, for example, we saw some of the Arab states that stood in line to go to normalization of ties. We saw many other states that were stirred against them. But what we bargain on are the people. It is the people. Let me talk to the people. We are not asking you to hold arms or to shed blood. Just boycott. You only need to boycott. Don't normalize ties. Don't accept Israeli products. Don't accept to go to the Israelis, to welcome the Israelis. This is called a boycott. This is a passive issue that would show your responsibility, show your belonging and your true interests and where your national interests lie. I also want to show the people, like for example in Sudan, the governors of the authority in Sudan, that the normalization of ties with Israel will not resolve their social and economic problems. And this is the, we take an example, we saw this in all countries that have deals with Israel for years. This does not impact positively their economy or their social status or development of life in their country. Some people want to show us this image from that country or that country. How many young men, young women, they went to Palestine, they took pictures, they put them in social media, and they said, okay, now we have normalization of ties among people, or what we read from social media. Let's not forget there are electronic soldiers that do not represent the true position of the people. Those are some figures, individuals that are coming. There are people who have said very clearly that it is the government that sent us. It is the kingdom that sent us. They talk about hundreds or tens or thousands or tens of thousands, but we are asking you about 1.5 billion of Muslim people. Where is their position from the issue of normalization of ties? The Israelis are giving it an exaggerating, but giving it a bigger significance, more than it should, or amplifying the issue of normalization of ties. When we come and see Netanyahu, Kochafi, we are telling them, in the face of the resistance, what are you doing? Those whom you are signing normalization ties with, or whom you're signing agreements with, you are not in a state of war with them. They have no impact at all into what's happening inside Palestine, and still, it is the responsibility of the people to face this war of normalization. And once more, we remind the people of the words of Sheikh Raghab Harb, who said that if we don't shake hands with the Israelis, then therefore this in itself is a weapon. I'm sorry I have took so much time, but I'm trying to be very much concise. Just very recently, the chief of staff, the Israeli chief of staff, has said, has given a speech, and he has spoken about the achievements. He exaggerated, giving speeches. He spoke about the region as if all the states in the region have corona, and Israel does not have the problem of corona, where they know they have a real problem. The entire region has economic problems, whereas they don't have an economic problem, as he is saying. However, when we see the real numbers, we have maybe a million, many people who are unemployed. He's trying to cover the negative aspects in their entities. He is a military commander, just giving threats, trying to launch a psychological war, that we will fight the resistance in Gaza, in Lebanon, in Yemen, all over the place. I cannot talk about every single point he mentioned, but I want to say one thing, just one point, which I want to comment on today. He came and said and gave this theory that the Israeli commandment, the Israeli leadership should change, should make amendments. What is this change that they want? That they have a law, they live by the law, that they only target military targets. That in any future war, this will change. This is something that we will alter, that if there are arms among the civilians or rockets among the civilians, then this would give us legitimacy to hit those targets, even if they are civilian. This is the huge theoretical speech, and he used legal terms and so on. I want to give just one comment. The first issue is, who is he ridiculing? Who is he fooling? What sort of ethics? What sort of issues? From the beginning of the founding of the Israelis, all the wars, the Israeli wars, they have destroyed cities, they have destroyed villages, they have committed massacres, women, children, elderly. In Lebanon, mashallah, we have so many crimes and massacres. He was born late. He did not know what happened before him. He said he wants to change in this legal standard that they have. You are an entity. You are a terrorist army that commits massacres. You were founded based on committing massacres, and you continue to commit massacres. And these wars, they're not far. The July war in 2006, your war against Gaza in 2008, and so on. Everything that you've done, this is a point. This is very foolish. This is baseless. This is a certain attempt to try to show that Israel is civilized, a country that is one of the most monstrous and most criminal armies in the world. The other comment is that there's no problem. You can do what you want, and we too can do what we want. In any confrontation, we are not looking for a confrontation. Let me tell you, we will not leave the blood of our martyrs, of course, but we are not looking for a confrontation. But if we were forced to go to a confrontation and you enforce the war on us, then therefore we will take this war on. But with all clarity, if you hit cities in our country, we will hit your cities. If you hit our villages, we will shell your settlements. We have civilians and military figures, but you, with the admittance of your own military personnel, that the Israeli people are all an army. They are all soldiers. They go to school, they go to universities for 11 months, but there's a whole month where they serve the army. If we come and discuss this, do you have civilians and military people? No. You are all occupying forces. You are all military figures. And therefore, this sort of differentiation is different, true. We have civilians and we have military personnel. But we clearly, in the past, like we said in the past, we were able to protect our villages in the 90s from Israeli shelling, and we did the April Accord, which was able to protect the civilians only after we shelled these settlements. And today, whoever wants to come and to create a new equation, we will come to the same old equation. If you hit our villages, we will hit your settlements. If you hit our cities, we will also shell your cities. If you come and take our civilians as pretext that there's military or artillery, and therefore we will take that as well. I also want to warn you that all these threats that we are hearing from the Israelis, talking about fighting days and so on, I want to warn you that even the sort of this game that you are playing, of sort of days of fighting, no one could come and say that the game of days of fighting would not lead to a full-scale war. And if war began, Israelis should not pretend to be strong. The front, the internal front, and the home front of the Israelis will be faced with a retaliation which is stronger than anything they have faced in the past, and therefore you should stop playing those games, should know your limits, and the time when they continue to threaten and the rest of the world is silent and would succumb, this is ended. There is a resistance in Gaza. He threatened Gaza. He threatened Lebanon. He threatened the people of the region. from Gaza to Lebanon to all the countries in the world, in the region. This is an issue that we cannot rule or govern based on the same mentality that we had in the past. This is a very different phase. This is a different era. This is the era of the resistance. This is the era of the resistance alliance, where the resistance is also calculating the time, calculating the places, calculating the geography, and studying everything. But no one should think for one moment that everything that was said and everything that has happened would touch upon the determination and the will and the capabilities and the strength and the determination of the resistance in order to accept your own equations and your own rules. And on the commemoration of our commanders, our martyred commanders, and all the leaders who have followed them, Sayyid Mustafa Badreddin and Shaheed Hassan Laqis, and all of the other commanders who are many, all the martyrs, we say once more that we salute them, we promise them that we will bear and hold on to their will.
We're live there in the Lebanese capital, Beirut, listening to the words of Hezbollah Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. Now, he started by commemorating the martyrs of the Lebanese resistance movement, praising their personal contributions and sacrifices for the cause. Sayyid Nasrallah then mentioned Bahrain and the people there, marking the anniversary of their uprising recently, wishing them well in their fight for freedom, equality, and justice. The Hezbollah leader also touched upon issues of forming a government in Lebanon and said that no group or faction should be excluded from participation, and that all Lebanese voices are important, and if there is any vigilance that needs to be expressed to this end, it's to keep foreign forces and players out of Lebanese politics. Sayyid Hassan also went on to say that Tel Aviv has a history of killing its own citizens, agents, and collaborators to protect its interests. Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah called for the result of the probe into the Beirut port explosion last year, stressing that the Lebanese are entitled to be kept abreast of the investigation results. Sayyid Hassan also warned that there are forces using social media platforms to create rifts between Hezbollah and its allies, both within the country and abroad, including Iran and Iraq, stressing to be wary and aware of these efforts to divide us. He went on to speak on regional issues, saying that the Iran nuclear deal is an issue on the international landscape right now, and after years that Donald Trump was unable to get Iran to submit to his and his administration's will, that the Iranian nation held on to its dignity and sovereignty and did not cave in to Washington's demands. Another great nation which has shown its resolve and determination, he said, in standing against foreign aggression and plots is the Yemeni people and nation. And when it comes to ruining Iran and Yemen, Tel Aviv and Riyadh have persevered to achieve this, and both have failed. Sayyid also said that the Americans want to stay in Syria and Iraq and control the two countries and the respective resources, utilizing terror groups to achieve that end, particularly Daesh terrorists. On the Palestinian issue, Hassan Nasrallah said, as soon as Donald Trump and Kushner left the White House, we haven't even heard of the so-called deal of the century any longer, showing it has no support, and obviously the deal was a disaster to begin with. He also said that we can support the Palestinians by boycotting Israel and Israeli goods. It's simple. You can show your opposition to the normalization of ties with the Israeli regime, not through taking up arms against Israel necessarily, just boycott and divest in anything Israeli, and let your voice be heard in support for the Palestinians in any country you reside in, especially if it's one that is normalizing ties with the Israeli regime. That was Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah speaking out of the Lebanese capital, and now we're going to go back to our World News Bulletin here on Press TV. The Palestinian resistance movement, meanwhile, Hamas has blasted Israel for refusing to allow COVID-19 vaccine delivery to the besieged Gaza Strip. A Hamas spokesman described the Israeli move as a real crime and a violation of all international laws and humanitarian standards. Earlier, we discussed the matter in our news review program here.